I'm Sam Litzinger with Dr. Gary Weitzman of the San Diego Humane Society. Do you have a question for him? 1-877-610-3647. You can visit our Facebook page or our website, wamuanimalhouse.org. Let's take a telephone call from Elena, who's calling us from Washington, D.C. Elena, glad to have you with us in the Animal House. Question for Dr. Gary?
Yes, hi. I have a 5-year-old cat. She was a stray that was actually given to me as a kitten, so I think she's about 4.5, 5 years old, but it's okay. Approximate. We had her very young. And she is a great cat, aside from being, you know, a cat, so she's always been a little bit odd. The full name is Chairman Meowsy Cat, or ZZ for short.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what to call. I guess we'll go with ZZ just for brevity's sake on this.
Yeah, we call her ZZ.
Okay, very good.
But, you know, she's one of those cats that always wants to follow you around but doesn't want to sit on your lap, just wants to creepily stare at you across the room. So she's a great cat. And one thing, so I've had one ongoing problem with her since she's been a kitten. She's always been really well litter trained, unless she's sick. She doesn't go out of her box at all, except that she has what we call an elevator butt. So as she's peeing, she'll just kind of stand up taller and taller and end up peeing over the side of the box.
Excellent. Is this a new development? Is this a recent development for ZZ?
No, I think it's happened since she was a kitten. I think that that's always been the thing. And if you catch her while she's doing it, she'll keep on doing it, but you can kind of like hold her butt down and she'll keep on going.
It doesn't seem to
bother her, but she, you know.
Elena, is it a normal size litter box? You know, is it made for cats?
I've actually gotten her a taller litter box. So right now I think it's like 14 inches tall.
I would suggest that you get a litter box remedy for her. And that's really getting a very low-lipped, you know, low-rimmed, large, like twice as big litter box for this girl. Because she may be arching her back because of that higher barrier. I mean, it's a possibility. Or she just doesn't want to get that close to the litter. So I'd go to Home Depot, get a cement mixing tray, put her same litter in there, about maybe a half to three-quarters of an inch, and see if that breaks the spell of her missing the box. She may still have that same position, but she hopefully will keep it in the box because it's a much larger box. A lot of cats just don't like the litter box, and that may be why she doesn't want to get that close to it when she's urinating.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Our telephone number is 1-877-610-3647. Our website is wamuanimalhouse.org. Let's take a telephone call from Jane in Silver Spring, Maryland. Jane, glad to have you with us in the Animal House. Question for Dr. Gary?
Hi, yeah. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. What you got?
I have a golden retriever who just turned 1 year old. Her name's Pippa. And
okay.
We just moved from a condo to a house about a mile away. And Pippa is now exhibiting 3 S's that I've never associated with a golden before, which is she's stubborn, she's scared, and she's submissive. So when we've moved to the house, she now likes to sleep in front of the front door, so I can't leave without her. If I open the door, she makes a run for the yard or the car, and it's really hard for me to get her to come back inside. She's barking a lot at things that didn't used to set her off. Like last night, a message came into my iPhone and it dinged. And then she just went crazy with barking, like someone was trying to strangle me out of the house.
Wow. Okay.
Her eating was off for a little bit, and sometimes it's okay. At the beginning, she would only eat at night in my bedroom. Now she'll kind of eat during the day a little bit more easily. So, I mean, there's some issues there that obviously I'd like your help with dealing with, but I'm also thinking about moving overseas. And I have an option of leaving her with my mother if I do move, but obviously she's part of my family, so I'd like to take her with me.
Yeah.
So,
and you're worried about what the move could do in terms of stress and so on, and how you might maybe make the move more efficient.
Yeah, how I can make her more at ease now, but then if I am going to take her overseas, what I can do to make her more at ease and to make the move less stressful. Because even for me, the idea of putting her in the cargo hold makes me nervous.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a two-part question here. So the stress that's building up, Gary, is something you can talk about. But let's bring in Mark Botten, who's director of Pet Express, and maybe he can help us with the second issue here, which is travel. Mark, glad to have you with us in the Animal House.
Great. Thank you for having me this morning. And good morning, Jane.
Tell us a little bit about Pet Express before we get into the particulars here.
We're a worldwide pet transport company, and we've been operating since 1978. And every year we transport somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500 pets throughout the U.S. and all over the world.
And how do you do that?
A lot of it's all about preparation. Firstly, we like to work with the pet owners and try and understand what sort of a relocation experience they're expecting. And then we also like to learn a little bit about the pet. You know, is the pet comfortable around other people? Is it used to being in new environments? And very importantly, has it been exposed to a travel crate before? What we find happens quite a lot is a lot of pets never see the travel crate until it's time to go to the vet. So they associate going to the vet with the travel crate, and that's not always an experience that that they would look at positively. So we encourage pet owners to buy a nice new travel container, set it up in the living area, leave the door off it so that the pet can go in and out without any fear of being locked in. Put some bedding, put some clothing items that the family's been wearing, put some treats and some toys in the crate, and eventually the pet will start to look at that crate as being something like a little bit of a cubby house. And this can, depending upon the temperament of your pet, it can take a couple of weeks, it could take a couple of months for your pet to be comfortable with that crate. Moving is a very stressful time, and when all the commotion's taking place in the house, there can be a bit of stress transference from the owner to the pet. So we suggest to the owners that they try and maintain a positive outlook. They don't fuss over the pet too much, because once they start fussing, the pet will start fussing. And when all this commotion does start to take place in the house, if the pet is comfortable with its travel container, it will look at that as a place of refuge. And then when it's time to move the pet, it's already comfortable with its travel container, and it's not going to be such a new experience for it.
Gary, I want to bring you into the conversation to talk about the first part of the potential problem here. Pippa's pretty stressed already
the
in
stress.
Some ways.
I want to ask Jane a question first. Where are you thinking of bringing her now?
The first move was within Silver Spring. I've only moved about a mile away, and so I'm worried.
Ah, I see.
And it's interesting, because I've actually left her with family members for as long as 5 weeks already. So she is used to traveling around by car and going to new environments and staying there.
Okay.
I'm thinking about moving either to Europe or Asia for work.
It'd be great for you to bring her. You're not going somewhere that would be impossible to have a dog, I assume.
Right. No. I could have a dog.
Yeah. So I think that's where Mark can help us, you know, get her to Asia or Europe. But then you're going to have possibly the same situation you've got in Silver Spring with her stress. So I think the first thing that we always recommend is that people should identify what might be stressing your dog. Now, it could be something as simple as you moved. So you can't do anything about that because it's a new environment. But most dogs, especially Goldens, really are pretty good at being resilient about a move, especially a young dog where everything's an adventure. So I think, you know, the thing to do is to start really some training again, just because she might have hit reset when you moved from the apartment over to the house. You know, different environment, who knows? Maybe she's insecure and the apartment was more, I don't know, cozy, you know, little bit easier for her to control and see what was going on. So that's one thing, getting her some confidence again with some good training. The second thing is sometimes dogs need a little bit of help with a move. We do too. It's hard to really do a lot that will convince them verbally that it's going to be okay. And that's where your vet might help, with maybe a little bit of anti-anxiety medication for a while. I hate to have an 11-month-old on that, but if she's really getting crazy, like barking and waking you up at midnight, that's kind of something that you might want to talk to your vet about before you move, so you can get her under control before we ever bring in Mark here to give you advice about how to get her over to Asia or Europe. So those two things, I'd start with a good trainer again, positive training, and really reinforce some of those skills for her. And then the other thing too is to have them help you with redirecting that barking. So when she starts barking, first of all, I would not feed her up in your bedroom or set any precedents like that again. You know, tough love, right? I'd have her, this is where your food is. If you don't, she'll eat her food eventually.
Yeah.
She's a young, growing dog.
In the kitchen. We're done
good
with that.
Good work. Okay, excellent. And I think I would just let her, I mean, how long has it been since you've been in the new house?
Probably a couple of weeks now.
Oh, okay. Don't worry. It's not time to throw the towel in at all. I think this is totally, you know, fixable, because she's going to get more confidence. So I'd give her more time. I would reinforce some training with her and start to really spend time with this girl who seems a little bit insecure. If it goes beyond that and she's actually not making any progress, then I would definitely talk to your vet about maybe some medication for her, just for temporarily, just to ease her back into being comfortable with, you know, within her skin again. So okay. Now we're talking about how do we get her over to your new abode. So are you worried about that as well?
I've heard some really bad things about putting dogs in the cargo section of the plane, and so I am really worried about bringing her on an airplane.
Okay. Mark Botten, director of Pet Express, you're on.
All right, Jane, please don't be concerned. There are a lot of misperceptions out there about the cargo hold, and firstly, let me reassure you that the airlines have a special cargo hold which is put aside just for animals. It's temperature controlled, it's pressurized, it's dimly lit so they can see what's going on about them. They use the same air recirculation system as what the passengers have got upstairs. And to be perfectly honest, I do a lot of flying, and if I had the choice between laying down in a nice roomy crate with soft bedding in it as opposed to being upstairs in one of those skinny little airline seats, I would take the crate in the cargo compartment any day. It's not as bad as what a lot of people think. A lot of people hear about temperature being an issue. It's not the temperature on the aircraft. It's normally the temperature on the tarmac. They need to obviously transport pets from the terminal out to the aircraft. So if it's a very, very hot day, your pet may be exposed to hot temperatures on the tarmac for about 10 or 15 minutes while it's being loaded. And the same as if it's winter, it could be exposed to very, very cold temperatures and snow outside and that type of thing just while it's being transported over to the aircraft and loaded. But once it's actually loaded onto the aircraft, it's got the normal air conditioning system that the passengers are using. Please don't be concerned about the environment on the aircraft. I think there's a lot of old wives' tales and perhaps some stories about, you know, people doing independent moves on non-passenger aircraft or cargo aircraft. But we only use passenger aircraft if the flights and the planes are safe enough for people, they're safe enough for pets.
Are there some pets that simply cannot travel like this?
Snub-nosed breeds are a slightly higher risk. If you've got a boxer or a bulldog or a pug, because of their compromised respiratory system, they sometimes don't handle hot weather as well as a dog with a normal snout will. So that's probably the only proviso that I would put into it. Also, if you've got a very, very elderly dog or perhaps an animal that's got some sort of pre-existing medical condition, well, then, you know, you want to talk to your vet and make sure all those things are signed off. But, you know, we work on the belief that if you've got a fit and healthy pet, you put it on a plane, you'll get a fit and healthy pet off the plane. We don't suggest that you sedate your pets because the American Veterinary Medical Association has done some studies on sedatives and their effects at altitude, and the sedatives up at altitude can affect heart rate and blood pressure. They can also affect the dog's ability to pant, which, of course, through panting, they can regulate their body temperature. So sedatives are a bit of a no-no. And again, that's why it all comes back to preparing the pet properly, getting it nice and relaxed, giving it a comfortable environment, and treating the whole thing as an adventure rather than as something that you should worry about.
Really good advice. Mark Botten is director of Pet Express. Mark, thank you very much for being with us in the Animal
House. My pleasure. Thanks very much.
Gary, you want to sum things up for Jane in terms of the behavior issues here before we let her go?
Sure. I definitely would bring a trainer in just to give her that confidence that she might need. And, you know, if she's scared of everything and she continues to be, again, I just would say go talk to your vet about something to give you a little bit of pharmaceutical help. Okay?
Okay. Thanks.
Good luck. And thank you, Dr. Gary.
You're welcome, Sam. Here's an email from Kathleen, who's writing about what to do with old animal newsletters and whether they'd be good to donate. I think she's thinking to shelters or vet schools or something like that. So, okay, sorry, Kathleen, but nobody really wants these old newsletters. With everything online now, there's no need. But don't throw them out. They're perfect for recycling, which I think was your second option. So thanks for your question, and thanks for caring about animals and the planet. For the Animal House, this is Dr. Gary Weitzman.
This edition of the Animal House is almost complete. First, here's the answer to our Animal of the Day quiz. Earlier, we asked if you knew the name of the lime green amphibian with transparent skin covering its abdominal region. The answer is the glass frog. Although this frog usually eats insects, it's also been found to eat its own young. You can find this transparent creature in the rainforests of Central and South America. Special thanks to Dr. Gary Weitzman for his work, and thanks to you for joining us in the Animal House.
I've heard it too many times to ignore it. It's something that I'm supposed to be. Someday we'll find it.